Ausculta is Latin for listen up. Hello, this is Gertraud Gerschler, publisher of Ausculta Management Audiobooks, and I would like to introduce Professor Fredmund Malik to the topic of effective leadership and efficient management. He knows the challenging reality as chairman of a successful group of companies, and due to his long-term practical experience as an executive trainer for managers of all industries. From his seminars, books, and lectures, we have selected the most significant topics that form the basis for sound and successful management. The following is an abridged version of the original 4-hour audiobook on the principles, tasks, tools, and responsibilities of effective managers. Professor Malik, what does the term management really mean?
In short, management means nothing more than the transformation of knowledge for customer use. That is, knowledge is the determining factor of production nowadays, and management is the art of converting knowledge into ability and results. This is the primary responsibility of leaders and decision makers in all organizations. No organization gets along without managers. This applies to public enterprises as much as it does to private ones, to the civil service, to the government, and to the entire nonprofit area. Hospitals, schools, universities, political parties, associations, and organizations in the cultural sector.
Why do you think management is the decisive factor in today's competitive environment?
The success of a company depends on a variety of factors. In one case, it may be an ideal location. In another, the access to special raw materials. In a third case, it could be a brilliant idea. And a fourth may depend on a technological or scientific breakthrough. It is becoming increasingly evident, however, that the critical and decisive factor is management itself. The best location, superior raw materials, and the most creative ideas are useless if no one recognizes the associated opportunities, mobilizes the necessary resources, and converts all of this into customer value and results. These days, management is the most important mass profession. Developed societies need hundreds of thousands, even millions, of managers. The insufficient supply is one of the crucial reasons for the management deficits we see. In short, we need more highly qualified managers than in the past. However, statistically, not enough people are born with the necessary talent.
You also emphasize that progressive decentralization makes the problem even worse. Hierarchy is reduced, and organizations are made flatter, but the management problem intensifies in proportion to decentralization. Serious decentralization means an increase in leadership positions. In other words, more and better qualified managers are needed after decentralization than before. Each serious decentralization means an increase in leadership positions. That is, more and better qualified managers are needed after decentralization than before.
These deficits can be quickly eliminated as soon as a company recognizes the meaning of managerial competence and seriously begins to work on management quality. It is amazing how comparatively little time is needed for visible progress to be made, the level of employees to improve, and necessary methods and tools to be introduced.
Good managers must have the right attitude towards their work, and they must know and obey some fundamental rules of self-management, because therein lies the key to effectiveness. Therefore, the content of the management audiobook is deliberately designed to cover the four elements that characterize every occupation and every trade.
That is right. The first element is the specific tasks that need to be fulfilled in the context of an occupation. These can usually be learned, which requires acquiring certain knowledge. Whether we are talking about tradesmen, mountain guides, orchestra conductors, surgeons, or even managers, the functions can be analyzed, labeled, taught, and learned. Managerial tasks essentially entail thinking about and defining an organization's purpose and mission, plus setting goals. Organizing goal-appropriate tasks and operational sequences. Gathering decisions. Evaluating, measuring, and checking performance and results. Composition of human resources and the development and promotion of people. And, particularly important, the task of informing and communicating. The fulfillment of all tasks together requires above all craftsmanlike diligence and conscientiousness. There are no secrets in this context. Undoubtedly, there are people who have an easier time with certain tasks than with others. They may have certain gifts and talents that are useful to them here and there, and because of that, they will have more difficulty in other areas. Many ordinary people can learn the craftsmanship involved in management tasks. Secondly, each occupation is characterized by specific, well-defined tools that are essential for the fulfillment of the tasks. The mastery of tools can likewise be learned, and this usually requires just a certain amount of training. The general tools of management, or more accurately, the methods that managers must develop to be effective within an organization, are quite simple. They are the meeting and the report, job design and assignment control, personal work methodology, performance assessment, and the systematic disposal of the obsolete. The competent application of these tools determines 80 to 90% of a manager's effectiveness. Furthermore, every profession is characterized by guiding principles that instruct individuals on how to perform their tasks and use their tools. The acknowledgement and observance of such principles are usually connected with certain insights into the social meaning of an occupation, and particularly into the risks of its practice and the accompanying consequences. These first three elements of the manager's job, principles, tasks, and tools, can be taught, learned, acquired, and perfected in terms of their craftsmanship. The fourth element is responsibility, which is a whole other story. A manager's life consists of trial and error. All will make mistakes and hopefully learn from them and improve. The crux of the matter is not whether we have made mistakes, but rather how serious those mistakes are and how ready we are to take responsibility for them.
We will start with the principles of effective leadership and the topic of concentrating on a few things. In my experience, managers are faced with dozens or even hundreds of different issues every day. Unlike people in most other occupations, managers are constantly at risk of having their energy scattered and wasted.
That just emphasizes the need to concentrate on a few things. This is precisely why concentration is necessary if you really want to obtain results. You can be concerned with all kinds of things, but you can achieve noticeable results in only a few areas. The principle of concentration leads almost automatically to the proper priorities and to professionalism. This will be of special importance to knowledge workers, the most rapidly increasing group of people in our organizations, who have begun to displace and replace laborers. Mental work that is result-oriented requires sufficient uninterrupted time. Each interruption increases the total working time by the amount of time needed for refamiliarization, that is, the time needed to resume work after an interruption. In addition, it is important to mention that we have succeeded in the last 100 years in making manual labor so productive that the classic industrial worker is becoming extinct. In 10 to 20 years, manual laborers will make up only about 3 to 5% of the workforce, as agricultural workers do today. The vast majority of costs today are already generated by intellectual work, and the key to productivity in intellectual work will be uncompromising focus on a few focal points.
A modern society is dependent on top performances in all areas. But how can we expect individuals in organizations to actually achieve top performance? Don't we have to consider that the hundreds of thousands of people who operate in organizations, regardless of their position and duties, are eventually quite ordinary people, far from being able to provide top performance every day? And isn't it proper to question the humanity of a society that requires top performance from everyone every day? Isn't it inhumane to require top performance from ordinary people?
There is only one way to resolve this contradiction: the strict adherence to the management principle of building on existing strengths. Managers should organize tasks in a way that allows their employees to utilize their natural talents and strengths to their fullest potential. Accordingly, one standard of good management consists of asking oneself impartially, "What can I really do better than others? What are my real strengths?" And managers must ask this not only about themselves, but also about their employees. There probably is not anyone who has only strengths, or at least it is exceedingly rare. Everyone has both strengths and weaknesses, and the more pronounced a person's strengths, the more pronounced his weaknesses.
Therefore, success lies in identifying an employee's obvious and hidden qualities and matching them with appropriate tasks and projects. From experience, we know that people perform well at work when they can play to their strengths, which leads to positive feedback. The accompanying increase in self-esteem sets in motion a positive chain reaction. The person gets to know himself better, which gives him the courage to take on new and larger tasks. Along those lines, I would like to discuss another element: the tasks and roles of the manager.
Managers spend a lot of time on tasks that have nothing to do with management. Like it or not, they must use a major part of their day for time-consuming things. Compiling statistics, making appearances, and stuff like that are inevitable aspects of day-to-day work. There are, however, some things that only managers do, whatever else they may do. Activities that form the core of the management function. The quality of the performance of these activities determines a manager's effectiveness.
The first task of a manager is to establish objectives.
Managers decide on the key targets within their area of responsibility and what specific results are to be achieved in each of the target areas. They determine how it relates to the organization's overall objectives, and they ensure that everyone who contributes to these results receives the necessary information through effective communication. This basic principle of management by objectives is widely accepted. This is the predominant style of leadership in many enterprises, particularly those that are strongly decentralized. Nevertheless, in practice, management by objectives works badly more often than it works well.
Why is that?
I would like to draw your attention to some important aspects of management by objectives that you should keep in mind. You should also require your employees to familiarize themselves with these concepts. Provide an overview of the general thrust. You can hardly expect your employees to set appropriate objectives if they are not aligned with the fundamental course of the company and do not know the intentions of the executive management. Briefly and concisely, explain to your key employees the fundamental direction in which the company, the division, the profit center, and so on, should go. A face-to-face presentation is always better than a written one, but in large companies, a written one will do. In any case, after providing verbal guidance to your employees, you should also give them a written copy. Verbal presentation is more effective and more motivating, while a written one is more precise. After providing these instructions, give your employees 2 to 3 weeks to develop their goals based on the outlined approach. The following points should also be considered. Instruct your people to set a limited number of objectives. This is precisely the kind of scenario in which you need to make sure your people focus and concentrate. Focusing on a few key things is one of the secrets of effective leadership. Experienced and effective managers focus on 1, 2, or 3 key areas that remain at the forefront of their minds amidst the hustle and bustle of daily business. This is how they make clear progress in these few areas by the end of the year rather than setting up a bunch of small goals, setting up a few large ones. The job, rather than the boss, should be the source of authority. The job should lead. Large, exceptionally large, tasks motivate and develop people. Assigning your employees tasks that are too small and goals that are too modest will cause your most important and expensive resource, your employees, to fade away. Furthermore, they should note not only the one, two, or three things they must achieve in the next period, but also the one, two, or three things they want to stop doing, things they do not want to do or should not be doing anymore. The annual definition of objectives is not just a way to encourage focus, but also the best opportunity to systematically clean up the organization, to make it lean, to detoxify it from the inside out, clear away accumulated garbage, and make room for new things.
Another basic rule of management by objectives is quantification.
Make sure your employees quantify goals wherever possible, but do not be dogmatic. Experience shows that the more important a goal is to a company, the harder it is to quantify. Sales, market share, productivity, and much more can be quantified. But what about quality, customer benefit, customer satisfaction, innovation, and so on? Do not insist on quantification when it is not feasible. However, always demand the highest level of precision possible. The guiding question should be, how will we know if we've come closer to achieving our goal by the end of the next period? Let your employees describe the expected results by the end of the respective period as precisely as possible. As a little trick, they can describe the results as if the goal has been met. Something else seems quite important to me. Unfortunately, significant goals are often contradictory. We have no choice but to accept that. Although all textbooks say that you should set consistent goals, it sounds plausible, but it is too good to be true. Therefore, establishing effective goals requires the ability to assess and balance a range of factors.
Do you set objectives for your employees, or do you establish them together?
Whole libraries have been written on this topic. However, this question is far less important than one might expect. The rule is, make sure there are goals. That is the executive function. If managers have sufficient time and particularly good employees, they can agree on the goals. Do everything, or at least as much as possible, to reach a consensus. However, you will often find yourself in situations where you have to say, "We have now spent 6 weeks discussing these goals. Unfortunately, we have not reached a consensus. Therefore, I must set the goals now." Cooperative leadership is often superior to directive leadership. Sometimes, however, cooperation produces no results. It is essential to emphasize leadership. Keep in mind that not every employee needs to set goals in every target area. Overall, however, the entire area of responsibility must be covered. Make sure that goals are set in at least the following areas. Firstly, the market position. Secondly, innovation. Thirdly, productivity. Fourthly, human resources, particularly with regard to attracting talented individuals. Fifthly, liquidity and cash flow. And sixthly, the profit requirements.
Is it better to manage all employees with objectives, or only some of them?
Unfortunately, people tend to make overgeneralizations about leadership issues. The principle that everyone should be equal under the law is an essential aspect of the rule of law. However, this does not imply that everyone should or can be treated identically by their superiors. Managers, therefore, have to consider very carefully which employees can truly be managed by objectives and which cannot. Above all, manage your key employees by objectives, but not every secretary needs to have goals. Ensure that your employees are focused on the right objectives and then allow them to organize themselves around those goals.
However, experienced employees should not be managed the same way as inexperienced ones. It is important for inexperienced employees to carefully examine the objectives and place great emphasis on precision and, if possible, quantification. These goals must be thoroughly scrutinized and discussed, and the resources considerations must be checked very carefully. Managers do not know these people well enough yet, and these people do not know them. Objectives are a valuable way to clarify mutual considerations and expectations. Conversely, you do not need to exert as much leadership effort with people you have known for 8 or 10 years. You know how they react, and most importantly, how they work. In that case, less precision and less discussion are acceptable. So, do not engage in false egalitarianism. Experienced professionals find it discouraging to have to follow the same procedures as entry-level employees because they have already demonstrated their competence and reliability.
In this context, proper delegation is one of the most important management tasks. In the traditional management style, tasks were assigned through individual orders. The superior not only decided what had to be done, but also how it had to be done. The employee followed the instructions and carried out the order. However, this management style requires that superiors be the most competent individuals for all decision-making issues within their area of responsibility and are always available. After all, employees must be able to contact their superior whenever a decision needs to be made. As functional relationships become increasingly specialized and differentiated, leaders cannot always be the most competent individuals, nor can they be constantly present. More and more, leaders are compelled to assign long-term work projects and trust their employees to independently manage them and make necessary decisions.
So, what are the fundamental prerequisites for effective delegation?
Decisions are no longer the responsibility of managers at the top of functional areas. Rather, they are the responsibility of employees at their respective levels. Rather than following specific instructions, employees now have a defined area of responsibility within which they can make decisions and act independently. A superior truly delegates only when he gives responsibility and authority at the same time. True delegation means establishing independent areas of responsibility to achieve goals. This requires decentralizing decisions and responsibilities. Employees are given the power to make decisions, the responsibility to execute goals, and the means to achieve them. This gives them a certain degree of responsibility. Within this framework, they are empowered and compelled to plan, make decisions, and act autonomously.
Another important leadership task is establishing the appropriate decision-making procedure.
First, we need to clarify what this is really about. Have we identified the real problem? The greatest difficulty is neither the complexity nor the markedly incorrect understanding of the problem. Most managers quickly detect an erroneous understanding. The biggest pitfall is defining the problem in a way that seems plausible, but is actually incomplete or only partially correct. This definition is often accepted too quickly due to time constraints. This is where a leader's attitude sets them apart from other people. A sense of responsibility and obligation, as well as accuracy and conscientiousness. Consequently, we do not begin with the facts, but rather with our opinions about them. We can never obtain a correct solution from an incorrectly understood problem. However, if the problem is understood correctly, any errors in the solutions can be quickly and easily identified and corrected. There is only one way to avoid misidentifying the problem. Each problem definition should be evaluated repeatedly against all available facts. A paraphrase of the problem is inadequate if it does not include all the observed facts. We often misinterpret problems because we do not spend enough time examining them. A lead time extension is usually advantageous as long as we can answer this question. Is the situation unique, or does it indicate a fundamental problem with rules and principles? This distinction is necessary because the way to solve the problem is entirely different. you can solve a one-time, exceptional problem in a pragmatic, ad hoc manner. For the most part, you can improvise. The problem will never occur again in the same way. A fundamental problem, however, requires a fundamental decision. In order to resolve it sustainably, you must find or determine a policy, principle, strategy, or rule. Decisions of this kind have much greater consequences than those for an isolated problem, so they must be made with much more attention. Second, the following question must be answered. What are the minimum results that must be achieved by this decision? The minimum expectations must be defined clearly and precisely. Everything else the decision entails is icing on the cake. Carefully consider what would be best for this organization in this situation. The third step of the decision-making process is to search for alternatives. There are always more possibilities, but they often exceed the deeply ingrained thought patterns of organizations. Alternatives are often not taken seriously simply because they come from younger, newer employees. The current status, the zero option, must also be considered. The status quo is rarely the best option. That is why we have a problem and need to make a decision, but that is not always the case.
But aren't managers always under pressure to make decisions and implement changes? Is it not true that many managers believe that they have only fulfilled their management role if they are constantly initiating new and different projects?
But that can be fundamentally wrong. Though the status quo may be lacking and fraught with difficulties, its great advantage is that it is familiar. A new alternative might seem like the solution to all problems. It may well do so, but we must naturally assume that it will create its own set of difficulties and problems that we do not yet know about. That is why everything looks so perfect. Finally, it is crucial to carefully consider the risks and consequences of each alternative. This fourth step in the decision-making process is typically the most labor-intensive. A systematic, thorough, and careful examination of all the consequences and risks associated with each alternative.
What is important here?
At the outset, consider how long each alternative would tie up the company and how easily the decision could be reversed. A lighter touch may be appropriate for decisions that only bind a company for a brief period of time, or that can easily be reversed. However, decisions that commit the company to a certain course of action for an extended period of time, as well as decisions that are difficult or impossible to correct, require much greater diligence. Furthermore, every crucial decision involves risk, and this is unavoidable. This is precisely why it is important to recognize the type of risk you are facing.
The unabridged main edition of this audiobook thoroughly explores the risks relevant to the decision-making process, as well as the implementation and monitoring of objectives. Here is a brief overview of the manager's tools.
Mastery of certain tools is a prerequisite for success in the role of manager. When it comes to management, people often think of complicated methods, cash flow analyses, economic efficiency, and investment calculations, critical path analysis, and so on. While these methods are vital for certain experts and specific challenges, the typical manager's tools are, first, the meeting, second, the report, or more generally, written communication, third, job design and assignment control, fourth, personal work methods, fifth, the budget and the budgeting process, sixth, performance appraisal and evaluation, and seventh, systematic cleanup and renewal of the organization. In order to be effective within an organization, managers must master these tools.
60% of managers report spending 80% of their time in meetings, 60% of which are unproductive. What steps can be taken to tackle this challenge and boost the productivity of meetings?
Start by asking yourself this question. Is this meeting absolutely necessary? Each meeting with at least two participants results in the creation of 3 additional meetings in subordinate working groups. Therefore, carefully and thoroughly consider the goals that should be achieved by this meeting. Setting many different goals is always a mistake. The key to productive meetings is focusing on a limited number of significant topics. Therefore, the agenda for a good meeting needs to meet the following requirements. Include the objectives of the meeting, or rather, of each topic, in the invitation already. Schedule only a few topics. 7 plus or minus 2 topics is a good rule of thumb, and the fewer, the better. Write the minutes in the present tense. Specify the time of day that the meeting will start and the time that the meeting will end. Both dates must be announced in the invitation and agenda. The people invited and the location of the event must be clearly visible. Structure the agenda psychologically, not logically. Even better, structure it systemically, considering the customary reactions of a complex system made up of complex individuals. Consider the purpose of each topic and the expected results. Is it just for information, or is it also for discussion? Is the topic just to be touched on, or is it to be brought to a conclusion? Is there a decision to be made? And so on. For each topic, consider whether prior coordination or an agreement is required. Lastly, it must be clarified in advance with the participants what each person's contribution will be. For example, giving a speech or making a presentation, providing expertise, or contributing to a decision, etc. The third part of the unabridged version of this audiobook offers specific advice for chairs and facilitators.
In addition to formal meetings involving several people, I would like to mention the annual boss-employee review session lasting at least 2 hours. I am not referring to a meeting about a specific issue. Rather, I am referring to a meeting that focuses on interpersonal relationships and addresses the following questions. What do you particularly like about our organization? Is there anything you do not like? As your boss, what can I do to help you work better, more easily, and more effectively? Have this conversation with your key employees once a year and schedule the next meeting right away.
Finally, there is one more crucial tool for leaders and managers, and that is the regular disposal of the obsolete. This largely unknown but immensely powerful idea is a constant source of amazement in our seminars and lectures. The objective is to establish a systematic procedure for eliminating outdated, conventional, and unnecessary elements within an organization. This concept is what sets apart organizations that are fat from those that are lean, inefficient from efficient, slow from fast, and lazy from vital ones. The purpose of this intrinsic automated revitalization is to enhance productivity by creating space for new opportunities. The decisive question is, of everything we are currently doing, what wouldn't we start doing again if we were not already doing it? This sentence may not be the smoothest, but it is incredibly effective. When compared to traditional behavior, the importance of using this method to systematically clean up becomes clear. Most people and organizations just add new things to everything that is already there. They do it to keep up with the times, to innovate, to avoid missing anything, etc. But that is the safest way to end up suffocating in your own garbage. Vital organizations are consciously and systematically reversing this behavior. They are asking themselves, what should we get rid of? And what should we stop doing? Every 3 years or so, you should ask yourself, what would we not do again in terms of products, markets, customers, and technologies? And ask this question once a year about everything that is done in the organization. That is, about all administrative procedures, computer systems and software, forms that are used, lists that are kept, reports that are written, meetings that are needed, just because people are used to them, even though they no longer produce results, the entire flow of documents, procedures, programs, and methods that are used, and so on. This question should not only be posed for the entire organization, but also be used as a natural, routine tool by every manager for their department and themselves.
Part 4 of the Unabridged Ausculta Management audiobook offers an in-depth look at focusing resources on opportunities, budgets and the budgeting process, management of the boss, management of colleagues, meaning in life, and managerial responsibility. Finally, it is important to note that modern managers are under constant pressure due to the sheer volume of information they are expected to manage. The only possible counter-strategies are to extract relevant knowledge from enormous amounts of information and consume it efficiently. The goal I had in mind when I produced this Ausculta Management audiobook was to provide my customers with added value. Listening to the audiobook repeatedly allows you to deepen your understanding of the content. You can refresh this proven knowledge, which has lasting significance regardless of trends, even years later, at no additional cost. For detailed information and ordering options, visit www.ausculta.com. Listen carefully. Enjoy leadership training on your car radio. It is the manager training school in traffic jams.